Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Roof Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the founder and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. Hope y'all enjoyed last week's episode. It was really fun getting Erica on here to chat with us. We do plan to do an episode basically once a week for the next several as we go through this off season of all off seasons, if you will. If you have something you'd like to see or maybe a suggestion for a guest, please go ahead and send that to us. But our guest for this week is the voice of the Rice Owls, JP Heath. How you doing, man?
Outstanding. Thanks for inviting me on. I really appreciate it.
And then I guess transitioning over, from having Erica on the show last week, we talked to her about her experience in Frisco. And during the same time, I feel like every 15 minutes something changed, and we were texting back and forth. And, you know, from what was it, Wednesday night to Thursday, all my days are running together. But can you just kind of walk me through like that, like what, like 8 hours of being on the floor and trying to call a game and pay attention to what was going on in the world around you?
Yeah, 3 years ago, 2 weeks ago is when it would have felt like. Kind of going backwards for to the beginning of the tournament, I was calling the way that y'all know, but our listeners might not know, but the way the structure of the conference tournament is I love it. I might be in the minority. I don't know how many opinions are out there about it, but I love how they have the different courts. Maybe it's because I'm an unabashed Cowboys fan, but that's probably another podcast altogether. But they have the one game on one court and another game on the other court, kind of back to back. And I'm sitting there. I just started the pregame show of the women, and I'm seeing and getting a text from our esteemed Mr. Bartlett that, hey, the Big Ten is canceling. Another SID came over and showed me at about that same time, hey, all these conferences are not just playing in front of minimal attendance, they're canceling. I'm like, well, it's coming. I mean, and it was right when I started the pregame show, and I said something to the effect of, hey, at least for now, we've got Rice women's basketball. And it wasn't but 30, 45 seconds later when the big baritone PA guy came on and said, hey, lack of a better term, or canceling this, and both teams just walked off the floor. It was an ending you could have forecast, but it was still surreal in the effect that there were a good number of supporters there, and it was just done. And I looked up, and a ref was looking at it, a conference tournament official right next to me, and he kind of did the universal cut sign, his fingers across his throat, and I was like, wow. Okay, this is real. And needless to say, I had a very abbreviated broadcast for that one, just a few more minutes. And when moments like that happen, it just doesn't seem like it's real. I keep repeating that, but it doesn't seem like this is what should be happening. You feel bad. And then not just not playing, but the fact that you're calling the team for the favorite and the one seed in the tournament. Last year won it and had a great run in the season, and you thought that they could maybe have gone further this year. So it's this combination of sadness for, like you talked to last week, Erica Gumake, and just obviously Tina Langley, her staff, and all the other players around Erica that were so, so good. And they seem to be coming together at the right time. And the night before that was probably the most surreal broadcast I've ever had, because the men were playing FIU across the football field, across the curtain on the other side, on the other court. And I normally, kind of standard operating procedure, I don't mess with Twitter during a game, maybe at halftime to see, is there anything big or something going on across the conference? Did somebody score 40 points, you know? But I was glued to Twitter during the game.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, it was the Rice men's game was a night tip along the same time with the NBA going on. So you would have had Gobert test positive in the NBA shutdown while the Rice men were on the court. Is that right?
Yeah, it was all a mess. It was all a blur because a buddy sent me a text about Gobert. Bam, I see it all over Twitter, and they're talking about eventually Donovan Mitchell, I think. Maybe I guess he came out the next day, but then as Coach Perez was, so you have the emotion of the game, Ako Adams is playing on one leg, hitting threes, and FIU pulls away, and they get the win. Side note, it's not part of it, but it was not the best officiated game, but that's a rant for another day. That wasn't, I told my dad. My dad said after the game, we talk after every broadcast. He's like, I've never heard you get that animated over refs. I was like, yeah, I'm usually not that guy. Anyway, but so Coach Pera, I don't know if y'all caught it.
Because he got teed up in that game.
Yeah, his first career tech. And
was that really the first? Wow.
Yeah, he told me after. And I was, I don't keep that, those deep of stats. And I didn't think that was, he didn't have many, but then he confirmed afterward that was his first one. And it was a backcourt thing. The other team clearly went backcourt and they didn't call it. Anyway, coach is in tears. He's crying because I asked him, he had just had an emotional meeting with the guys after, obviously, you got five seniors, Ako and Rob, big contributors the last few years, Ako. All-time three guy, all-time free throw percentage leader, games played, and all that good stuff. And right as coach is sitting down, I see the Woj bomb, the tweet that says, hey, the NBA has canceled its season. And I'm like, wow, that's pretty surreal. I had my tweet deck open. And so that was kind of the beginning of it, kind of jumped around, skipped around there. But it was just the most bizarre circumstances. Skyler, the guy that's my producer back in Winston-Salem, how we connect for the broadcast. We were talking, we had our own little sports talk show going during each break. So it was a weird, weird night with emotion. You had happiness of a big Rice start, and you had sadness of the season ending and just this bizarre, it's like a movie feeling. I've heard a couple people describe it since then. Tom Hanks was diagnosed that night, his tweet. I mean, it was just so many things. President Trump had addressed the nation and all that. It was just so bizarre in here. 3 years later, 2 weeks plus later, and it feels like 3 years, but here we are now recording a podcast talking about it, but it seems like ages ago.
Yeah, it's wild. As someone, JP, who talks for a living, you're on the air and you've just had to go through, I mean, it wasn't even 24 hours. The men tipped off at like 7:30, something like that, and it's 11 a.m., so it's 18 hours later. What do you say?
I was speechless, which is, as you know, and you've joined me on a lot of baseball broadcasts, that you kind of have to talk in this business. And I didn't know what to say. And I always probably too critical of my work, listening back at some things and like, I should have said this, should have not said that. But I was like, there wasn't too much to say, except I don't even remember specifically, but paraphrasing something to the effect of it's beyond disappointing. And just how everything Rice had worked for just had that win against Old Dominion in emotional fashion, the end of Erica Gumake. But just seeing the ladies go off the court, it was very graceful. There wasn't, I'm sure there was some anger / disappointment after, but it's out of their control. And I think they really do a good job on Tina Langley's staff embodying grace and trying to kind of roll with the punches there and only worry about the things they can control. But that, it was just, as far as you said it, yeah, the math, 18, 17 hours, whatever it was, it was as crazy as you could imagine. Because then I didn't know it until a few hours later that I wouldn't be calling another game until hopefully what September 1st, whenever the U of H game is coming up. So it's just a really surreal feeling that I think sunk in about a week ago, but it's still hard to wrap my big noggin around it.
Yeah, I was looking back through our text logs and that the night of the men's game before the women played, we were talking about whether or not that game was happening. We were talking about, you know, we're trying to figure out if the Marshall baseball team was going to fly to Houston. We're like still contemplating. I was like, well, you know, I'm gonna be bummed if people aren't gonna show up in the stands, but you know, me and JP, we're still gonna get to hang out. They'll let the media in, and then poof.
Yeah And oh, how these things change, and it snowballs so fast. And I get it, I don't want it to, maybe it's just me getting older and crotchety, and I promise, I think you know me well enough by now, Carter's like, who is this grumpy old man talking? But I don't complain about many things, but I wish a firm decision was made sooner by the conference. Like, there's no reason to drag that out, but it seems like, oh, the Power Five conferences are doing this when we could have done that. I know there are logistics and reasons behind it. They had to get the athletic directors together. It's not just easy. You can't paint with a broad brush. But, and again, to their defense, it is a lot easier in hindsight looking back on it, because it was just, it almost seemed more gut-wrenching to kind of Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football kind of tease them with, okay, we're playing in front of minimal fans here. And, okay, nope, you're not playing. But I understand. I get the big picture of it. But it was just, very disappointing.
Yeah, it was weird how it's crazy to think about how quickly it all kind of snowballed. And then, like, I remember, I saw a friend that night, that Wednesday night. And when we met up with them, I was talking to one of them. And I was like, oh, it's going to be weird, because they had announced that they were going to play the NCAA tournament, but without fans. And I was like, oh, it's going to be weird to watch those games without people in them. And then, you know, I can't remember right specifically, but it was like later that week, I think it was Duke that first said, like, we're not going to play even if a tournament happens. And once that happens, it was just like, well, you know, that, like, it's only a matter of time before all of this really gets canceled. So.
Yeah. And then mixed in their Ivy League canceling spring sports. I'm like, wait, what am I missing here? Like, and leave it to the Ivy League, the other collection of smart schools, you know, Rice is in that realm too, but Ivy League saying, and they ended up getting it right, you know, and it's the right thing to do. I don't want anybody to think, oh, they should have played in front of them. No, that's exactly the right thing to do. What they had to count, it just stinks in the highest order that they had to do it.
Yeah. And anyone, you can go back and find on the website. Now that I've had a week to process or so, and I still haven't wrapped my mind around it. The Ivy League canceled their tournament on Tuesday. And then by Friday morning, the NCAA tournament was done. And Tuesday, that was the most far-fetched. Like, what do you mean? So,
yeah, like that can never happen, but it did. Yeah.
Which, you know, a perfect amphitheater for that to play out in real life would be sports, right? Where something that can't happen happens every day.
Expect the unexpected, right?
I'm still trying to wrap my mind around it now. Maybe I eventually we'll get there. Might take us 10 years. But on the decade that has been, I kind of I would imagine that most of our listeners are familiar with you to some degree, or at least heard you talking on their favorite sporting events. But I kind of want to peel back the onion a little bit and kind of talk about your journey and how you got to be the man behind the microphone and why everyone knows your voice. And then just kind of, you know, that your journey to Rice and what the, like, last couple, I guess, a decade has been, and some of your moments in your career to now, since, you know, we have free time with no sports.
Yeah, hey, we got till September 3rd. That was actually the date I checked it. Got U of H September 3rd. So we got a while, but it was a snowy night in Greenville, Texas in 1978. Well, no, that we won't go back that far, I guess. But let's see. I started doing Rice baseball in 2009. So that's kind of the bookmark there. So I'll back up and go forward in a little bit. But I got into radio out of college, like most people do, just dabbling, did the waiting tables thing, and figured out, hey, I really love this broadcasting thing. Just I always grew up a radio nerd, listening to sports talk shows. I originally thought when I went to college I'd be a writer. Like, who wants to write these days, right? See, joke with you two guys, you know.
Those crazies.
So I decided, you know what? And I got to know the sports director at Texas A&M Commerce. I'm a Commerce boy. Went to old ET. Last semester at East Texas State, my dad taught math there forever and a day. Shout out to the other bigger John Heath. But I was like, man, I love this radio thing. And eventually got an internship at WBAP in Dallas, and then finagled my way into a job down in Lufkin, doing everything under the sun, including paying for my wedding by cleaning the station. Just, you can name it, just calling JUCO basketball games, men and women calling Lufkin High School basketball, Dye Ball High School football, eventually got into doing baseball, and then kind of parlayed that into doing junior college baseball, which I used on my demo to get the Rice job. But man, God is good. He had a greater plan. And I remember applying a lot of, I don't think I've ever told this story. We joke about it all the time in the booth, but as far as me actually airing it out there, the public can consume it. The color commentator job came open for Rice football. And I was thinking, okay, yeah, I could do that. I thought I didn't know still. I don't think anywhere near what I am now, but I thought I could do that. Been around, I did some sideline work for SFA up in Nacogdoches and A&M Commerce. I had college experience, so it wasn't like I was just coming out of nowhere. But so anyway, I applied for the Rice football color commentator job, which now one of my closest friends, Nate, beat me out. He got that job. But the guy, the man that was in charge of the hiring, Russ Dean, I'll forever be in debt. He said, hey, I like your tape. We got a guy that just fit a little bit better. And of course he did. I'm glad it ended up this way. But so Nate got the color commentator job while another friend of mine, David Saltzman, was doing the games back then. David, side note, pause button for those that don't know, he also worked up here in Lufkin a few years before me. So we have some common connections and stories about very strange bosses we both used to have. But anyway, so I don't get the color commentator job for Rice football, but Russ said, hey, we might have a baseball opening coming up. What do you think about Rice baseball? Like, yes. could I say yes any quicker? So I got some tape together a couple weeks later, sent him some of my older baseball stuff. And so that was a few months later in February of 2009. That's when I started doing Rice baseball. Along that same time, I did, again, this is probably way more than you want, but hey, we've got until September 3rd, right? So at that time.
What's our storage limit on the upload site, Carter? Yeah, can we go 5 months?
Well, we got that premium membership now, so.
It's your fault you asked the question. No, I'm just joking.
That's true. Please do.
I'll squeeze it down a little bit more, but in 2009, I got the Rice baseball job. I was fed up with my boss in small market East Texas radio. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I already had Rice baseball under my belt. God willing, if it works out, it works out. And I just took a leap of faith and did my alma mater, A&M Commerce. That came open, a blind call. After I made that decision, I was waiting tables and I was doing tobacco prevention up here in Lufkin, a nonprofit. Fast forward a little bit more. In 2012, they wanted to consolidate the positions, football, basketball, and baseball at Rice. Unfortunately, it couldn't work for David. So then Sam Torres at that time, we were IMG by that time. And Sam, who later turned out to be a good personal friend, even roomed with him my first year and a half or so down in Houston. But he gave me the call. I remember I was in Southeast Texas doing a run, doing some tobacco compliance checks, I think near Coons, Texas. And Sam called me and said, hey, what would you think? He didn't officially, it wasn't an offer or anything, but we set up the interview. And later I met with Rick Greenspan and Rick Mello. And again, you talk about floating on air and just not believing everything that you've been through and kind of trusting that God will work it out. And you just don't know. You know how that is. We've had those kind of talks before, Matthew, but it's just amazing to look back and see all those steps along the way. And then the friends I've made, I know we're going to get into different moments later, but man, the friends I've made, the connections, I think I tell people all the time, young broadcasters email me and I remember the friendships and the connections I've had more than the scores of the games. So that the relationships is what you take from it. And just so humble to keep doing it. And I can't wait for a long more time too.
Yeah, it's kind of like the word we use at the beginning, it's kind of surreal. And I guess over that decade, you have, like you mentioned, met a lot of people and seen a lot of things. If you could kind of, I guess we can start baseball at your springboard into Rice, but how have you seen that program? Obviously, it's been, I don't know, probably one of the biggest transitions in college baseball, if not college sports, from Wayne Graham to Matt Braga. And how have you seen that kind of, I don't know what the word is, but the transition from Rice baseball, the powerhouse, to Rice baseball getting back?
Yeah, it's tough. It's been really at one part of the seesaw, the teeter totter. It's been, you're up at this high point. And it was epic. It was amazing. I unfortunately never got an Omaha run in me. The last one was 2008, but
yeah, you missed it by a year.
Yeah. I'm the jinx, so I don't mind. I'll take the bullet on that one. Got close, in 09 and 13 with the super regionals, but, again, I don't know how much y'all are talking about it, but since you brought that era up, mentioned Coach Graham, the absolute, icon of icons in Rice sporting history, if not Rice, just academic school history. Just and people know, but they almost don't know. And this is where I kind of pull out the broadcaster card, just seeing how he works and he tweaked things behind the scenes, and just the master psychologist he was. And it was such a tough ending the way everything happened, but. Just talking to him in coaches shows and pregame interviews, where a usual 3-minute chat to do a pregame interview turns into 45 minutes and him telling you old minor league and Texas league stories and how he played under Casey Stengel. It's crazy. But just having him, that's a podcast in and of itself. But just now, Coach Bragg, I like him so much, and just the things he stands for. It's been a tough going. Obviously last year they had some high water points where they improved and got better in a lot of areas. Obviously losing Cantorina and Kravitz was huge. And this was a dreadful, I mean, I'm not going to beat around the bush. It was a dreadful start to this year. So I don't know if people would mark this year as totally incomplete, but it wasn't fun. It's not always supposed to be fun, but it was just, I don't know what to think, because I mean, with that last game against A&M, you see some promise in the way the guys could have improved. They just didn't have the usual stable of pitchers to get up there like a lot of people are used to over the last few years. But really think a lot about Coach Braga, the staff he has, and Coach Barton, and Coach Giannis too. And heck, now it feels weird me calling him Coach Takel, but Connor Takel. having him around too, just really think so much. And if fans will give Coach Bragg and the guys some time, he can get it back. I know he can.
Some good folks for sure. And yeah. Then I guess it's interesting that you've kind of been in the middle of the three major sports that you've called. You've, I guess, split now between at least head coaches that you've covered. So the other one that I guess, if we're going in reverse order of recency, if I made that phrase up, would be Coach Bloom, Bloomgren, and football. What has that transition been like, and what have you seen, I guess, from your vantage point, like you said, behind the scenes, pull back the onion in the broadcast booth about him and how he's running things?
He's a pro. I mean, everything he does is detailed. Just he has that. And heck, I'll defer to you. You probably know him just as well, if not better, just how he treats people. But there is a definite seriousness to him that he's all business. But he likes to have fun too. He doesn't take himself seriously. He's not about wasting words. He's about saying what he means, meaning what he says. If you remember that. What was it? Last season, 2 seasons ago, I guess, his first game, the walk-off win against Prairie View, right?
And that's right.
It was good. It was great. But, like, hey, we need to do better, you know? Like, he just got his first career win, and he's not settling for like winning it that way. There were a lot of things they didn't do right, and unfortunately they didn't do well that year, you know. But then the way they came together towards the end of this year, you just started seeing, you saw it before, but you saw it all come together with those last three wins. It was a rocky ride. I mean, fans earned their their money with the way the games went in the Middle Tennessee game. I'm thinking of primarily there how Rice didn't score in the second half, but they still hung on to win. But just and then capping it off with a win at UTEP. He's the type that will, like, I'll get my most, I'm not able to go to a lot of practices, but I get my most out of him during coaches shows and like before coaches shows and during breaks. I'll say, hey, explain this to me here. And of course the press conferences, I'll talk to him, but with him, and then kind of, as you said, what backwards recency, whatever your clever educated phrase was.
This is a Rice podcast. We have to be smart.
Yeah.
Or at least pretend to sound like it, right?
Before Coach Bloom with Coach Bailiff, I couldn't think more of a guy and a coach than I do of Coach Bailiff. Just what he meant to me personally, and just the way he treated people and the way he had a grasp at having fun at the right times, but also like some of those Bloom similarities. But when it came down to the ball, he was hard on the guys when he had to, and the care that the players, you could talk to players now that hadn't played for him in 10 years, and they talk about love and just the friendship that Coach Bailiff had. Coach called me.
I was about to say, and y'all did the switcheroo, right? You came from Commerce to Houston, and he went from Houston to Commerce.
Yeah, right.
Have you caught up with him since?
Yeah. We talked a little bit, and not to be a Debbie Downer, but he called me. My brother passed away almost a year ago, and he called me. I was in the booth in Biloxi, and that meant the world to me that he would take time to call me, and we talked about 5-10 minutes and just. And that's the type of thing not everybody saw, just the amazing human being that he continues to be. And you've got the world's number one A&M Commerce and David Bailiff fan, maybe outside of his family, but just couldn't be happier that he's leading my alma mater now. Had a really good playoff run this year. So you've got the contrast. They're both great coaches and both great guys, but it's just neat doing this for so long to see how different guys do it in different ways and can be successful.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we so far have reached a pretty good continuity that, you know, we'd like every season to be a winner, but Rice has hired some really great men and women that kind of fit the identity and the culture of their programs. It's a pretty surreal. That's not easy to do.
Yeah, that's the number one thing. And and you made me think of something with Coach Blumgren. That's the culture with the intellectual brutality, how that has bought on. And you see on the recruiting side better than anybody how that has really bought on with not only the type of play, which is difficult to adjust to, but how you have to have that fit. And remember when Coach Blumgren said, you can't just take any job. You have to be the right fit. So fortunate to say that I think we do have the right guy in place there, and I can't wait for September 3rd that we've already referenced a couple times.
Yeah, I think that the thing for me watching Bloom in his first 2 years and now, you know, three recruiting classes, the recruiting has been, I think, maybe the biggest thing for me that I've been really impressed with, just because, I mean, in college sports in general, but in college football in particular, because the rosters are so big, like it all comes down to recruiting in a lot of ways. And I love that he's taking this national approach, because, I mean, it mirrors, first of all, like the way Rice constructs its student body generally. I mean, the people who have been listening to the podcast for a while probably heard me make a version of this speech several times, but like, when I was a student, so I was there from 2009 to 2013, like my best friends were from, you know, I'm from Alabama, but my friends were from New York and Dallas and Arizona and Georgia and all these different places. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, Rice football kind of only recruited in the state of Texas. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. There's a lot of talent here. That's kind of where the brand is the biggest. But, you know, there was to me, there was never any reason why Rice football recruiting couldn't take the same approach that Rice, you know, general student admissions takes, which is to find people who are kind of the right fit and kind of pick and choose a couple people from around the country to fill out the roster. And so I love that he came in and just took that approach right away to, you know, where they're getting a geographic diversity that's allowed them to find the players that have that fit this roster and fill out those classes and upgrade the talent level in a way that, in the time I've been following Rice football before that, I hadn't really seen. So that has been a really impressive aspect of it to me.
Yeah, just with we saw it some in 13, 14, 15, the tail end of guys that Coach Bailiff are recruiting, even the Canada connections with Luke Wilson, Christian Covington, towards the end and the latter stages of the Coach Bailiff era. But just, you're right. I mean, I couldn't have said it better than you did, Carter, but just how he has got the staff out there and what Alex Brown is doing right now too, to reach out there and just dominate. It's not the right word, but enforce that culture out there where guys all around the country are knowing that Rice name now. And you got the Patterson facility. You've got the academic background first and foremost, that selling the education to come in here. It's second to none. You can't get a better education in the state of Texas, so why not get the top flight athletes to match? And you're starting to see those in the recruiting profiles. But I defer to you guys on that. I always joke with Matthew, hey, I'll read about him from you so I can talk about him here soon. So
hey, it right now it's, at least it seems it's all coming up roses. So as long as we continue to say the good things, it's been a fun run. And I guess closing out the last of the programs that you have been on the mic for has kind of worked into, I guess, on the field that had probably about comparable success. But basketball under Scott Pera, he's, I guess, a year three compared to Bloom's two. But you've kind of had a bit more of a sample size with him to kind of see how he's built his program together. What have you seen and learned getting to know Coach Pera and how that program's evolved from where it was?
Yeah, you get to know him in a different way because you're on the road with them so much and you eat dinners with them and you watch film with them. You get to know the guys and you interview them after games and gosh, what, 40 times a year I'm interviewing Coach Pera and in between the coaches' shows and the games. It's probably sick of me, but you get to learn that guys love him so much, the way he impresses his style, and he gets on him. Like he gets on him, but he can do that because I think he genuinely cares about him. And there's that buy-in there. They obviously have improved win-wise each of the last 2 years. He had that rough year after the transfers of Marcus Evans and Marcus Jackson, Igor Kulichov, but the way he's built it since then, and you saw the growth of Ako Adams, and you got Malik Indigo, the transfer that'll be coming in from Texas Tech next year after sitting out this year. And they're just, they'll be bigger. They'll shoot more. I think coach wants to even ramp it up even more, just get that three ball, just make a few more of them, even though they're pretty good at it this year. But seeing how he connected to Coach Rhodes could take it and build it back up. I remember, I think it's safe to say this now, but towards the end of his first year, Coach Pera told me, say, you watch, in 2 or 3 years, we're going to be really good. And I think now you can see that coming up the start of next year. And the schedule obviously hasn't been released, but they've got a good balance of the schedule to be able to win a lot more games even than they did this year, but still against some top flight opponents. So I think his style, his approach, he's so technical. Like I talk to a bunch of people how they judge a basketball coach or inbounds plays, but the guys really play hard. They never gave up on them. They bought in. They did all that. They didn't win enough games this year, quite frankly. They didn't do enough still, but he's got them going in the right direction after the last 2 years. And I referenced it earlier, first few minutes of talking, but he's in tears. I'm talking to him post game of that last game when all heck was breaking loose on the NBA, and he's wearing it. Like, you could tell. We wrapped up our interview. I'm still talking and yapping, doing stats. He pat me on the back, and just like it, you really, really root for guys like that. And I just can't wait to see what they have next year and beyond.
Yeah, and I think on the no quit nature of what he's put into his team, I think, JP, that was probably the most frustrating thing about Rice basketball this year, if I could say that, is you'd watch and they'd go down by 25 in the first half, and you were just like, this is like ridiculous. And then they'd battle back and they'd take the lead.
Yeah.
And it's that point, like clearly there are technical, like there are smarter basketball people than me that know what needs to be fixed, but like coming back from 25 down once is hard. But I mean, they came back from 22 down and beat UCSB, and they had several other 20-point, 18-point deficits that they erased during the game. And I'm like, okay, they clearly have the oomph. I don't know what the other pieces is, but if they can get that, these are my technical basketball analysis, right?
I think, as you see, they'll get bigger, they'll get longer, they'll do a lot more things next year with Malik coming in. They'll have a little bit more size, that oomph, with Max and Zach getting older, more mature. It's tough really judging young big guys, but they'll be a better rebounding team. That was something that hurt them at times this year, but the way they played their that pack line defense, they did better. The rebounding margin was up there in the top third of the conference most of the year. I think they're a lot better rebounding team than I thought they would be. But they lost against FIU, and it wasn't really turnovers, but they went cold, and they had too many stretches. They have to turn, and I said this many times about this on games, that they need to win ugly games, and good teams. When you've crossed that level from improving to being a good team and then a great team and then an elite team, you win ugly games, or you're imposing your style. They did that a few times, but they just have to do it a little more consistently next year. But I think the dudes he's got coming in, I know he can do it. I really, as I gushed on and on about Coach earlier, really know he can do it. I'm looking forward to next year already.
It feels like we should still be playing basketball right now. We don't got to go back and revisit that, but we will close up, and we got a game to play with you guys that I'm going to let Carter dish out and explain, and we will put your 11, however many years of Rice broadcasting to the test.
Okay.
Yeah. So just as something fun here, we thought we'd do a Mount Rushmore of Rice sports in the last, and it dovetails almost perfectly with your time at Rice. And since we're still, is almost 4 months, or is almost April too late to do the decade retrospectives? I don't know, but here we are doing it. So
we're in uncharted territory.
So for the last decade of Rice sports, who are the, you know, if you were going to put your four big stone heads on the mountain, who would they be? And I think, so if we're going to work through this as a group, I think there are two really obvious picks here. One of them is the guest we had last week in Erica Ogwumike, you know, getting Rice women's basketball to the NCAA tournament, two-time CUSA player of the year, three-time all first team CUSA, you know, in terms of decorated players in Rice sports over the last decade, I'm not sure there's any other player in any sport that really compares. So I think Erica is a pretty easy selection. The other one, I think this qualifies perfectly fine because he did play 2/3 of his career. That first season was technically 2009, I believe. But the other one, I think it pretty much speaks for itself, is Anthony Rendon.
Yes.
National Player of the Year his sophomore year in 2010. Obviously now a very well-known and successful at the professional level. But yeah, I think he also speaks for himself. So I think the debate comes down to those last two spots. So I'll open up the floor to you guys to start the nomination process.
Okay. Matthew, you want to go first or can I agree.
No, I'll let you take the lead on this.
Okay. In my first, if Carter's our MC here, and this I assume is the whole 10s, because I came on in 09 for baseball, but didn't start football until 12. So,
is this podcast the decade starts in 99 or decade starts in 00?
I'm an 00 guy. I don't think I'm as educated as you guys though, but I'm an 00 guy.
We'll let it slide. do you have someone that played like 06 to 09 that you're itching to put in there? Are you trying to switch the rules here?
I mean, if we can go back to the latter half of the aughts, whatever we're gonna end up calling them. But if we can go back to 2008, then for me the debate just becomes which two of Chase Clement, Jarrett Dillard, and James Casey do you decide to put in there. But I think exactly. Maybe it's a more interesting exercise if it's, so let's say 2010 to 2019.
Okay, and then. I definitely would agree on Rendon and Agumake. I wrote them down. And then my other two, again, this was tough. So I had some other qualifiers, honorable mentions too. But my other two are Christian Covington for football. And I put Taylor McCard for football. Conference championship winning quarterback. I consider Dreyfus Jackson. Dreyfus wins that Armed Forces Bowl game, playing the second half after Taylor suffered a concussion, and then Dreyfus wins the Hawaii Bowl, had a good season after that, but Taylor McCarg won you a conference championship. So I put him there, and then Christian Covington. And I guess, Carter, that was right. I guess that was right after your wheelhouse, or right around your wheelhouse with Covington.
I did. Yeah, so they won that conference championship. That was the year after I graduated, or that was the fall after I graduated. I was still in Houston, but I was around and aware of it. I actually know Christian. He was a freshman when I was a junior, and I think he redshirted, so I guess that was his redshirt season. But yeah. I actually had a musical theater class with him my junior year. He's a great kid, really yes. Nice guy. Lovely singing voice too.
Nice, fantastic human being, just great. So I had those were mine. Now, if we had a basketball caveat, and if it was just sports I broadcast, because I only did a handful of women's games, and then I would put maybe Marcus Evans in there, but he only played 2 years. So I think to make the elite. The Roos podcast, Mount Rushmore, you have to play most TM. Of your, yeah, exactly. You've got to play most of your time at Rice. So I think Rendon, Agumake, and then Covington because he was so dominant, and then Taylor McCard because he was a quarterback on a conference championship winning football team. The other honorable mention, it was in the decade, but if you're thinking men's basketball, I didn't call his games, but Arsalan Kazemi, even though he transferred to Oregon, most of his time was played at Rice. I never called his games, but he was a beast, man. He did work, and just you look at down the stat sheet what he did in the record book. So I think he's got to be, it sounds like we're kind of etching this out on the fly, but he would be in consideration, but that's this broadcaster's opinion.
Okay, well, I have a couple curveballs for you. I will say that I went and did my list and ended up with probably 8 or 9 names, and from that point, kind of worked backwards. I'm like, okay, who's in that pantheon? You know, if we're gonna separate tiers of who were the best of the best, So, of course, I had Anthony Rendon, Christian Covington, and Erica as my first three in. But that fourth spot was tricky. So I had Taylor McCart, and then that was another one of my honorable mentions. But there were three that, and since y'all have flushed out the top three, I'm going to throw out all three of my remaining honorable mentions and cheat, and then we can figure out which one might be the fourth slot. We invented the game. We can make up the rules as we go, right?
Why not? Yeah.
Okay, so honorable mention, Matt Canarino with baseball. I think that he was a guy that had he been on one of those elite Rice teams would have been viewed. And I mean, he was a top round draft pick and the major leagues. If he would have been on one of those great staffs, you're looking at a guy who was probably viewed as one of the best pitchers of his era and probably was regardless, even though he was on part of the low points of the baseball team. So he's one. And then I think the other one that, I don't know if we ever specified that it had to be an athlete. If it doesn't, it's hard to make this list and not put Wayne Graham on it.
Well,
so.
Yeah, that, we didn't specify athlete. I was thinking athletes. I mean, yeah, if you're if we're including non-athletes, then I mean, it's Graham in a landslide, and there's really no point to going on to additional candidates.
So if we separate him and we put him out to the side, I'll give you my last one. And, in the actual athlete, not coach category. And it's Sam McGuffey. He had a pretty good career at Rice, but if we're talking about Rice athletes, I think everything he did from going into the NFL and being an Olympic bobsledder that merits at least an honorable mention.
Yeah, outside the box, I like that. He was a freak. I mean, everybody knows most of his story, but that's a good one. I also had John Duplantier. Had Canarino, and Duplantier was figured in there, but kind of like Canarino, Dupe wasn't on those elite teams, but he was a son of a gun. Pitching on his stuff was just amazing. You saw Coach Graham really harness that. But good catches by you, young Matthew. That's a good one.
So we have three. So who's our tiebreaker?
The last name I would throw out there, and this one's a bit of a curveball because I dug deeper into the sports repertoire for this one, would be Catherine Ipp, who was a Rice women's tennis player who I believe in 2017 was the only All-American in Rice women's tennis history. So anytime you get an All-American, I feel like that warrants you for consideration, even if women's tennis is, well, either Rice tennis team is maybe not the most visible sport on campus or in the public mind, but I think that merits consideration.
These are good.
Hey,
I wish I could have dug more and maybe found like some track people or something like that, but that's far enough. I know the sport of tennis at least well enough. And once you get into like track and swimming, it's a little farther out of my wheelhouse.
Right now, Michelle Folkham is making a bid in track as one of the best. She's been fantastic.
Yep. I just think you win a conference title at Rice in football. Taylor McCarr, here I am selling it for Taylor like he needs my help. But do you put two football guys on there? Does Cove, even though he wasn't an upperclassman on that team, does he garner that kind of belt as the representative there? But I think Taylor, what he did to lead that team and to win a conference championship in the way they did it. Jordan Taylor, another dominant
skill. Yeah, Jordan's skill another candidate for football.
So, I mean, my gosh, I think you have to have baseball. You got Rendon, check. You have to recognize Erica, her greatness. And then the last one, as we kind of all agreed on Cove, that's the big question. What do you think?
Yeah, I think if you were only going to do one football player, especially one from that 2013 team, I would go with Cove for sure, just because when I think of that team, I kind of think more of the defense. The offense of that team got the job done, but they weren't like like when I think of the great modern era, or, you know, in the time since I've been a Rice fan, so about 2006 or so, the great Rice football teams, like with 2008, you really think offense. I mean, I always think about that game. It was parents' weekend that year. I remember because my parents went, because that was my sister's junior year. They played North Texas and won 77-20.
Yeah.
So I guess when I think about that 2013 team, I think about that defense. I think about watching that A&M game and watching Christian sack Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
So, yeah, you definitely make a good point about Taylor. And I think he's a strong candidate here. The other candidate I would bring up from football is actually Chris Boswell.
Because,
you know, if you're going to factor in
your connection,
if you're going to factor in like professional success as like a serious criterion here, like I think you can make a pretty solid argument that he has been the most successful NFL player maybe to come out of Rice over the last decade. You know, given the way he's locked down that role in Pittsburgh for so long and for a couple of years, was one of the better kickers in the NFL. I remember watching him, and I mean, he won, straight up won several games for us while he was here. And I just remember watching him come out, and he was the kind of guy, it was like I'm a Braves fan going back. And I remember being a little kid and watching, I would ask my parents who was pitching for us, and they'd say Greg Maddux. And I'd be like, oh, we're going to win. Like that was just the reaction. And I remember, like, if Chris Boswell came out to make a game winning kick for Rice, I was like, all right, we're going to win.
And if we're talking specialist, front of the pod, Jack Fox, honors upon honors of all conference and everything for how dominant he was as a punter. I think maybe we don't recognize that as much just because Chris Barnes came on last year and had an equally really, really good year. But what Jack did from the punter's perspective, it'd be pretty tough sell to get a punter. You'd have to be Ray Guy, probably, to get a punter on the on a Mount Rushmore, but Jack might be Rice's right guy.
When and if Jack signs NFL, you're his PR guy. You've got to sell that to him, that whatever team he goes to, because no one, and rightfully so, you give the best pub to Jack. rightfully so. He's a good dude, too.
Hey, punters are people, too. But that doesn't make it any easier. I'm leaning, if we're talking straight Rice achievement and accomplishments, I lead Taylor. If we're talking a little bit out of the box and just talking about Rice athletes, I think everything that Sam has done has been fun and pretty incredible. So those are my two final suggestions. Who wants to break the tie?
Hey, Carter's going to make up the rules anyway, so I'll defer to him. He already told me that.
That's a tough one.
I'm going to tell personally whichever one you don't pick. I'm kidding. Although either if we would get Taylor or Sam on the podcast, that would be a lot of fun.
Man, that's tough. I think I want to go with Sam, actually. I like this is a Rice podcast after all. So I think the out of the box pick is all other things being equal. The out of the box pick, the unconventional one, if you will, is perhaps the way to go. So there you have it.
All right. So then we're settled, and everyone has full reign to go print their own top four as they choose. But the official TM Roost podcast, Mount Rushmore of Rice Athletics from 2010 to 2019. We need a better title for that. Anthony Rendon, Christian Covington, Erica Ogumike, and Sam McGuffey. That is quite the quartet.
With a side Mount Rushmore of all the other guys we mentioned.
Right. I think we got 15 or 20.
they're on the sub Rushmore.
Yeah, like I was just at Mount Rushmore.
Rushmore Hill?
Yeah. You have the little
The Black Hills right there, right?
Yeah, you have a little Keystone, Colorado. It's down as you go down the hills. They have like a miniature hill there, but still great. Yeah.
You can be in charge of telling all those guys they're on the Keystone. Oh man, that was fun.
Yeah, that was... hopefully we don't get too much hate mail about the horrible inaccuracy of our selections.
Hey, and this is an open invitation to anybody that we mentioned that is on that list and would like to defend their candidacy. We have from now until September 3rd. So come on and make your case.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear more because of what Coach Bevin's done in track and field. And Carter mentioned tennis. Coach Schmitz had so many great tennis teams. And, I mean, heck, volleyball. You look at what Nicole Lennon's done.
Another great season next year. She could play her way onto the list.
Yeah, so hey.
Yeah, Nicole's a good pick.
10 years from now and 2030, we're going to be doing this podcast and putting that now.
Hey, that would mean I still have a job. I'll take it. All right. Well, I think that's all we got for this. This was fun. We will go put these lists out on social media, and I'm sure we'll get plenty of other opinions, and we welcome them of who we missed. Please let us know your suggestions. And before we wrap up, JP, I wanted to say thank you so much for coming on, and I wanted to make sure everyone knows where to follow you and hear you during the off season and what else you got going on. I trust you are not sitting on your East Texas porch drinking your sweet tea and just doing nothing.
No, I've already downed my one diet root beer of the night. That's how wild I get. But at Rice Owl's Voice on Twitter, just started a podcast. It actually just dropped tonight. Had the trailer going for a little while, but I have a newfound respect what you guys have been doing for a few months now, just knowing the hard work it took there. It's called the Texas Porch. Me and some buddies from high school and college, we just talk about all things Texas, barbecue, road trips, the miserable organization at times the Cowboys are, as frustrated fans that we are. But no, just mainly about just hanging out, having a good time, talking about different concerts we might go to. But thetexasporch.com and wherever you get your podcast. It's been fun getting it together, and that will definitely – I planned it for a while, but it'll definitely keep me busy a lot during this unplanned extended off season that I also kind of redefined my spotting charts too. So trying to stay busy, but I really appreciate you guys for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Now this Texas Porch podcast, is it recorded on the porch? Are there like ambient crickets in the background? Do we have the whole nine yards?
Yeah, we talked about last night. Maybe it was we went so long and started yapping. I know you can't believe it, but we have a tendency to talk a lot.
We're not familiar. I've never been told. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not familiar with that on this podcast.
Exactly. So we split it up. I split it up into two episodes. I released part one just a few hours ago. But we talk about going to different barbecue spots or like going to Big Bend or going to obviously different sporting events, but interviewing people. We have like a dream list of Texas guests, but just trying to have fun with it. We don't take ourselves too seriously, and it's just a bunch of guys punching each other in the arm, making fun of each other, and just having a good time.
All right. Well, we could use a laugh and a pleasant distraction these days. That's for sure. So it's thetexasporch.com. We find you there, and we can get more of what everyone just got to experience over the past hour and change.
Yeah, just a small sampling tonight in a Texas Porch Pod is the other Twitter handle. But you guys are awesome. Really, I tell you a lot, Matthew, but what you do for Rice Athletics and now extending it to Carter as we officially kind of meet here tonight. Just thanks for what y'all do for Rice Athletics. It's such a great institution, as Carter obviously knows and Matthew, you know, but just thanks for the pub that y'all do.
Well, thanks. We appreciate absolutely. It.
Y'all be good.
Rice fight
never dies.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.